Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, otherwise known as Thigh Masterpiece Theater. I am your host, Bob, Mr. Piccolini, Mackie, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of The Critic. Who else is here with me today?
Michael Raparez, and I don't know why I'm so clumsy. It must be my big hands.
Who else is here today?
Proud graduate of L'Université de Française de Hackensack, Diana Goodman.
And as always...
Henry Gilbert, and I just flew in from San Francisco, and boy, are my Judy Garland records tired.
And today's episode is A Pig Boy and His Dog.
Good night, Porky. You made me look so dorky. They kill you in New Yorkie. I hope you rot in hell.
I love it. Today's episode aired on July 20th, 1994. And as always, Henry will tell us what was in theaters at this point in history.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby! John Grisham's The Client is turned into a film starring Susan Sarandon and Tommy Lee Jones, and Lorne Michaels produces a new Lassie film that happens to feature a young Michelle Williams. Finally, Elijah Wood starring North becomes Roger Ebert's one of his most hated films of all time.
And which, I believe a series of books was based on a quote from his review of this movie, right? A series of books that he wrote.
Yeah, he hated it so much. And this, I actually found a clip of him discussing his hate for this film.
Oh, I miss him so much.
It's the end of the 1994 year in review episode of Siskel and Ebert.
Let's hear it.
When it came time to write my newspaper review of this movie, I don't know, something just came over me. My fingers on the keyboard had little minds of their own. I was rolling along, writing my usual scathing but civilized comments, when suddenly a sinister inner force took over and I found myself typing, and I quote, "I hated this movie. Hated, 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 hated this movie. Hated it. Hated every simpering, stupid, vacant, audience-insulting moment of it." Unquote.
was John Lovitz in North? Or is that Jason Alexander?
Jason Alexander is.
Yes.
Yeah. I never even watched. I only knew it as a joke of a hated film, and that at like Rob Reiner's roast, the Comedy Central roast of him, I believe it was Michael McKean reads that review to him about his movie on stage. But so, yeah, it's apparently Elijah Wood is a boy looking to be adopted.
It's one of those annoying kid power movies where a kid divorces his parents and he's just so privileged he can travel the earth to find new great parents. And there's some offensive Eskimo jokes in there. I mean, everybody gets thrown under the bus. Has anyone actually seen North in this room?
Diana. I did. I believe I saw this in the theaters because it was like summer vacation at my grandparents' and I just had cabin fever. Like,
this
we
looks
didn't have
fun.
Much to do. So it was like, well, this will get me out of the house. So me and my brother went and saw North. Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. And it's like, it's a cute concept. Like, you could make a cute movie of like, then he goes to Texas and he meets crazy Texans and then he goes here and blah, blah. It's bad.
I haven't seen it. I have listened to podcasts about it. It just seems very hateful, like weird, strangely hateful for a kid's movie with a whimsical premise. And the main character kind of sucks, too.
Everything sucks.
Yes.
Everybody's – no one is likable. It's a horrible movie.
Meanwhile, you can't go wrong with a John Grisham adaptation in the 90s. But I mean, economically speaking.
Yeah.
What was the name of the movie again? They all run together for me.
The Client.
The Client, right.
Yeah, not a good one.
Yeah, Susan Sarandon and Tommy Lee Jones are both prosecutors, I believe, protecting a kid who witnessed a gangland murder of a mafioso.
Isn't that the one there's something about, like, the kid can control his heartbeat to play dead?
Oh, I don't really recall that bit.
That sounds like Grisham?
I believe it was young Brad Renfro. Troubled Young Man.
Interesting.
And then the Lassie film. Like, there's a Lassie movie every few years.
And Lorne Michaels was behind it.
Yeah, Lorne Michaels was driving this one. And it just – nobody else famous was in it. Michelle Williams wasn't famous either, but this was just – she was in films like that, you'll occasionally see like, oh, this child star went on to be a real star. Mm-hmm. She would do this movie and then 2 years later be cast as the bad girl on Dawson's Creek.
I know we brought up Lassie on a Talking Simpsons or Talking Critic, and there's just like – there's 600 episodes of Lassie. Can you imagine – that's like a torture in hell, I think. It's just watching every Lassie back to back, and then it starts again.
For me, I came to hate Lassie just because it was – it was the bedrock of Nickelodeon programming. I'm just like, okay, it's 2 o'clock. The 2 hours of Lassie. Great. I'll just sit here and watch Lassie.
Surely you kids want Dennis the Menace in the 50s.
Dennis the Menace is so much better than Lassie even.
I do kind of regret missing that like weird like lost episode of Lassie that they made into like a mini event, which is like – Timmy gets exposed to radiation.
Whoa.
Ray Day Chun? What's that?
Wow.
They're going to die, Timmy, and Lassie won't help you now.
So we are at the final episode of The Critic, of the first season of The Critic.
The final ABC episode of The Critic.
Yeah, and I think we already kind of went over this, or I did, just that the show was officially dead to ABC by the end of its first month of airing. By
the fourth aired episode or the fifth?
The fourth aired episode, there were already stories in Variety of The Critic's in trouble, people.
It stinks.
Maybe it's going to Fox. Officially, it became a Fox series in April. And actually, I just found out in the research for this episode, those final eight episodes that aired over the summer were also partially held for the summer because originally the negotiation was going to be Fox would air those episodes as the first half of a broadcast season two. Mm. So they would start airing. It wouldn't have – The Critic season two wouldn't have premiered in 1995. It would have started on Fox in 94 in the fall with those eight episodes and then go into the next 10 they made. Mm. But eventually that part of the deal fell apart. So they had to air on ABC, which is then why ABC contractually just dumped them in June and July when no one was watching the show.
They probably could have made more money off of Home Improvement reruns, just three in a row.
Yeah, no. But, yeah. But contractually, they had to first run somewhere. That's the deal they made. So that's why that's another reason why these were held to the summer, on top of ABC just wanting it to get the fuck off of their channel to stop dragging down the ratings, which it was.
No more animation for us until Clerks, and then no more forever. Yes. So this episode – oh, yeah, The Good Family. Who cares? This episode starts with Jay and Jeremy at a screening of a parody of Pinocchio and Aladdin. And I've captured the parts with Bogart the Roach, played by Jeremy Hawk, and the Beige Fairy. Let's hear them.
G'day, mate. I'm Bogart the Roach. I'm going to tell you the story of Pinocchio. A wooden puppet who wanted to be a real boy. When you make a real big blunder, have a pint and then go chunder.
Beige Fairy.
Oh, I just flew in from San Francisco and boy, are my Judy Garland records tired. For shame, you have befouled a child's cartoon with evil thoughts.
Captain, I am getting some evil thoughts.
Evil thoughts. Spock, get that tribble out of your pants.
There's great animation on that. I don't feel like they're writing a parody of the genie. They're just writing more material for him.
Yeah. I do think comedy writers – this was 1994. The genie premiered in 92. And I think it was that comedy writers were just sick of the – they've like, it's overdone. We've had enough of Robin Williams. Like these jokes are like, calm down. Calm down, Robin Williams. And every movie after Aladdin had to have a Robin Williams-type character of a famous funny man who says the silly things. Mm-hmm. Not just Disney. Every animated movie had to after that.
And this is the second use of Chunder in The Critic. And I have to wonder, they're running out of things for Jeremy to say that are Australian and Jewish. So I wonder if they're going to keep that character for season three. I don't know what else they could do with him.
They were already running out. And I didn't – this was the first time I ever got the Bogart the Roach joke.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which means bogarting as in hogging the roach, a.k.a. the marijuana cigarette, which I've never – that feels like a generational thing. I'm not saying I'm Johnny Pothead, but I've never heard anybody call it a roach.
But so are all of the jokes in this children's cartoon aimed at adults? You've got Bogart the Roach, drink a pint and go chunder, which is Australian for vomit.
Yes.
Yeah, Julie, and then the Pinocchio itself is like a – Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan making a reference to a Bob Dylan song. Mm-hmm. He says, "It's all right, Ma, I'm only wooden," as Pinocchio.
Wooden.
But yeah, the song is "It's all right, Ma, I'm only bleeding," and it's a great song, and you should listen to it.
Mm-hmm. It's 7 minutes long, though. I don't know. Too long.
Jay complains about the show he's on by talking about how they just recycle the mouth movements. It's awful, awful, I tell you, awful.
Two mouth movements just paused on the screen. That was. It was nice that they recognized how cheap they were getting, but still, though, actually, that it's funny. He insults the animation of the movie when actually it's
not the best great.
Animation yeah. critic ever had. I've said it a dozen times on The Simpsons, Talking Simpsons. It's true here, too. If you ask professional animators to parody Disney, they will go above and beyond to make it look amazing.
Yes.
Like Disney feature animation looks.
And the beige fairy scene looks so good because the genie's design is supposed to look like an Al Hirschfeld drawing, and the critic people are supposed to look like Al Hirschfeld drawings in their own way. So it makes sense that that would, you know, turn out so well on the critic.
Yeah, it looks good. I mean, the preacher looks a lot like Pat Robertson. They did a nice job. And yeah, the it's still the genie when it's Kirk and Spock, but, you know, they still did look like Kirk and Spock. And it's very fluid. And,
yeah, all the poofing in and out, just like Genie does in the movie.
Yep.
Though I didn't like, it was just such an obvious joke that Geppetto is voiced by Arnold.
Yes.
And we get it. But he doesn't need to say, I'll be back. I was like, I got it. I know it's Arnold. You started the show with a phone call joke
that's
of
right.
Arnold.
Actually, like, I don't like their Arnold impression. It's not very good.
No, it's not. Not in this episode especially. Like,
that's
Rabbi,
Nick Jameson.
Rabbi P.I. was not bad. This is bad.
It's pretty bad. So one of the main plot points in this episode is something that I think is probably the weakest thing in this episode and one of the weaker bits of the critic is Jay with the dog that he finds. I mean, they milked a lot of great dog humor out of The Simpsons. I don't feel like it's as authentic or as observational here. It's just a dog that bites him a lot.
Yeah.
Dog. Well, I think the dog is there to show the passage of time because it goes from puppy to gigantic dog over the course of the episode.
I can see that.
I think really the problem with this episode is how unfocused it is. Like you have a few minutes of just Tiny straight up, and then to focus on Eleanor's story, Tiny disappears for 7 minutes. And when that B-plot returns, you're like, Jay's got a dog in this episode.
Yes, but, he wants to name it Unchien Andalou, but he names it Tiny instead.
Which is a reference to the pioneering 1929 French silent film by Louis Buñuel and Salvador Dali.
Let's not forget about Debaser. Also good.
But I also liked him holding up the dog and then I guess that cop shooting at him on the street.
Yes, like the chief of police in New York.
Shooting the beer bottle out of his hand.
Yeah, and he gets the classic spin around and fall thing. He does so much. The first time that happened to him, it put him in the hospital. From every time after that, he's fine.
He probably has a metal plate in his head now that just takes the shock.
Maybe I like him finding, you know, the silver lining of getting hit in the head with a bottle and being, I could go redeem this for 5 cents.
Although his head also was crushed by that that ball that was thrown at him too at the Olympics day.
Oh, right.
At his kid's school.
I wonder if that embedded the shard of glass even deeper he got from Dial M for Mother.
Honestly, he should have more brain damage issues than Franklin has at this point.
So
it's a real cute design of the puppy.
I like the puppy's design.
So
it's very good.
You guys are recent dog adopters.
That dog ain't getting no bigger.
Did you? No, yeah. He will always be a Tiny. But so what did you think that I also didn't think there were too many novel ideas with the dog jokes in here, but did you guys think it was good? Or
experts? I mean, they never went to, we're experts now. I mean, they never went to the piddling on the floor. It was mostly just the eating everything in sight, which I like how it pays off with is there a ski mask and a grappling hook? Did Tiny eat a burglar?
That's not good.
Yeah, Jay has a lot in common with Tiny in terms of eating.
Yeah, and then Tiny coughs up a flashlight, so yes.
Yeah, flashlight that's still lit.
A man
just
killed
lit
and
time.
Ate him.
Including the bones.
Everything but the ski. Actually, it would be hard for him to – he'd have to want to keep the ski mask as a trophy. Tiny would have had to remove the ski mask and then eat the rest of it.
The dog is like a serial killer.
It's true.
Keeping trophies of his victims. Up next, we get another return to Ethel, our favorite character that only exists in Jay's mind when he's on the phone with Margot.
Hi, Jay. You coming to dinner tomorrow? You promised to help me fill out my college applications.
May I suggest Mrs. Pym's finishing school? I started there, but never finished. Oh, the irony is delicious. Now shut up. Don't hit me.
See you tomorrow. Don't bring Ethel.
I like that Margot recognizes Ethel. It's not just the thing that people flee from or
don't acknowledge.
She's kind of
tired of Ethel. Yeah. She's like, look, I'm tired of not acknowledging your problem with talking to Ethel, perhaps brought on by lots of undiagnosed head trauma.
And I'm sure you're expecting at this point, there's going to be a B-plot about Margot going to college or choosing a college. It ends in the next scene and nothing is ever spoken of it again.
I created that in my brain. Just this is where the college subplot with her. Oh, no, that doesn't happen at all. Though, did you notice the posters on Donna Walsh hated Fabio.
I was going to bring that up. We kept trying to freeze it to try to figure out, wait, what is this poster? I mean, there's a Fabio type guy, and then one that's a tiny little nerd in his underwear.
It's a Marky Mark parody, only it's called another
Harvey Hart.
Harvey Hart. Yeah.
Oh, so it's a Harvard joke, but of course by the Harvard kids who run all of comedy. I wondered why she would have a spindly nerd on her wall at his underpants.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a little old man, honestly. It's even more baffling.
I think it's a youngin.
Or he looked like the blue-blooded guy she didn't go to.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, you're right. Reeve Winthrop the 14th or something, I think his name was.
Maybe that's his rap persona.
She should have taken him to the ball. God, she should have been famous. So we can hear what Eleanor's plans for Margot are. It's more of her like being upper class but also very trashy. So here it is.
Margot, I've got it all planned. You'll gain your polish at Hackensack U, lose your virginity in a parking lot after a Dave Brubeck concert, and become a doting wife to a man who wears underwear on his head.
And that's
Mother,
Franklin.
You just described your own life.
Oh, good Lord. What a complete waste it was.
Well, I guess...
Make me what I am today.
Oh.
I guess the college subplot introduces the Eleanor being dissatisfied with her life. But before we move on, let's hear some Dave Brubeck. It's pretty swinging.
Yeah.
I mean, losing your virginity after hearing that is pretty classy, I'd say.
Yeah.
I just love that her first time was in a parking lot, too. I guess I had assumed it was inside of a car, but it could have been on top of a car to the side of a car.
No, I think the Dave Brubeck just gets girls rolling, man. Yeah. Just, get in that backseat, baby.
And that is the break music for the show, too. We have Take 5 is the 8-bit song that we play over the break.
That's right.
The critics, so it was pretty awesome. I just picked that randomly because I wanted an 8-bit jazz song to go to take us to break, and I really like that one. Then to find out that Dave Brubeck is actually referenced in the show, it makes it even more fitting. I thought it was interesting, though, that Eleanor was filled with regret about her life, because normally she seems to think she is the greatest person ever. And like Little Deb was all about her loving her past and wanting Margot to recreate it exactly. When they're about to do that again, then she has a realization like, oh, wait, that would be bad.
I think it's after everything that followed her her youth, I think, was a waste. I think she enjoyed her youth, drinking so much you fall into a well, having sex after a Dave Brubeck concert, but after that it was all Franklin and Jay and a wasted life.
I always love going back to the well of funny jokes about New Jersey place names.
Yes,
Université Française de Hackensack.
Again, I did not know Hackensack and Weehawken and Hohokus. I didn't know any of those were real places.
The twin jewels of Jersey.
I thought all these New Yorkers are making up crazy names for places. This is all these East Coast people, these Yankees, they don't know the real America. That's what I thought.
Eleanor's bridge circle recommends that she have an affair. And up next, this is mostly visual, but I captured it all. A Chippendales-esque grocery boy delivers her groceries. I'll try to narrate some of this that you can't see.
I'm here to fill your pantry, Mrs. Sherman.
Fine.
Where would you like these sweet buns?
Put them on my antique bun warmer. Never mind that. Put the cans up there.
Oh, no, a shirt.
He's fine with it.
And put the oil above the refrigerator.
Spinning the oil around? It dumps all over him?
Rubs it in.
I apologize. It's my big hands. Is there else you desire?
He's moving his pecs.
Oh, I get it. You want a tip. Have a cookie.
That's great. It's mostly visual, but I just love him like narrating all of it.
Yeah, it's so great. The accidental Chippendale dancer, pretty much. Like, it's so. I wonder if his thing is he just likes old rich ladies, and or is he auditioning to be a boy toy for her?
I think it's the scene is really just there to illustrate like why she doesn't have an affair. And I'm not sure. Like she has that little like. Oh, afterward, after she shuts the door. It's like, right. Is that realization that she was being oblivious, or is it like, this happens all the time?
Yeah, that, I guess.
I like both readings.
I think it's kind of cute in the previous scene when she's talking to her friends who are all just like, yeah, we cheat on, we're rich women, we cheat on our husbands. Duh. We have sex with our tennis instructor.
Mm. Or Wilford Brimley.
it's so great hearing Doris do that. I think it's kind of cute that Eleanor, despite clearly not being happy to be with Franklin, she never considered adultery an affair. She never even thought of it.
They're apparently. A fairly loving couple. And I mean, Franklin.
They still do it, which surprises Franklin.
That's
as much
true.
As does.
I mean, I'm as surprised as you are. I mean, for as out of touch Franklin is, he decides to consult his neighbor Wilson about the matter. Home improvement music.
I say, Wilson, my wife is terribly depressed. What do you think she should do?
Ribbit. Ribbit, ribbit. Ribbit, ribbit.
My dear, I think you should rivet. Rivet, rivet.
Franklin, this just isn't working out.
Forget the rivets, darling. Crazy glue will hold any surface together. It's crazy!
So in case you never watch Home Improvement, you're blessed. But the character of Wilson was Tim Allen's neighbor in the show. And you would basically only see the top of his head. And he would pretty much dispense philosophical wisdom to Tim that he would misinterpret and sort of use that to solve the problem in every episode.
And he'd just do it wrong, but the right in a lovable way. And that I got to give it to him, too. Like, not just the music, but the
transition.
The transition of the frog hopping across. Like, it was perfect. It was exactly how Home Improvement did their show.
And the Crazy Glue reference, one of the most iconic Crazy Glue things is the guy hanging from his hard hat off of a girder, being stuck to the girder with Crazy Glue. And we have a clip of the Crazy Glue 1980 TV commercial.
Crazy Glue, strong enough to hold this man suspended in midair. Crazy Glue repairs a broken china mug. Just run a little Crazy Glue along the crack and it's fixed in less than 10 seconds. Bonds almost anything.
It's crazy.
That guy's not crazy enough. There's an alternate version of that one, of that commercial, which is the guy doing a terrible, you dirty rat, you Crazy Glue, you'll stick to anything.
What the fuck?
But yeah, so the guy, the trick is that you put the Crazy Glue on top of a thing that is attached to a helmet, and then the helmet will stick to the girder even with a grown man trying to pull it down.
Someone had to have died doing that. I think is why we don't see that anymore.
The Crazy Glue is pretty strong. But yeah, the Home Improvement, I was a kid Home Improvement watcher. Like, I thought it was a great show at 12 when I watched this, and seeing them take a knock at Home Improvement was surprising to me because I thought, oh, is this not a good show?
They're saying it's bad.
Things explode.
I think they did it specifically because they knew that was their lead-in.
Yeah.
Oh, it was killing them. They were hearing – it was driving them crazy to hear, well, you're not Home Improvement. You know, Home Improvement would do this. Home Improvement would do that.
We said it before. This Home Improvement was the number one show on TV this year and for several years. It was the most watched sitcom period in this era of the 90s.
Yeah.
I love the idea that, Franklin's always going over to ask Wilson advice. Wilson's a scarecrow. He doesn't even notice.
With a frog sitting on
it. There's a different animal sitting on it.
Different animals happen to be nearby.
It's a great joke.
It is, yeah. I think, too, though, they talk about how they originally thought The Critic was not going to be paired with Home Improvement. They thought it was going to be in the risque 9:30 time, the same time where NYPD Blue got to show butts. They thought, like, oh, then we'll be safe here. Instead, they were created as a lead into Home Improvement. And so then when people's like, wait, he's having premarital sex on this show? The kids who watch Home Improvement can't see this. No.
But I did, and I loved it. But I still watch Home Improvement. So up next we have, because women Doris's age only either die or go square dancing, there's a square dance arranged at the Sherman Estates. And we have the little arrangement here, which I like.
Take your partner by the hand, strut like Daniel Moynihan. Grab your partner, do-si-do, clear the floor for Ross Perot.
Eve, I didn't win a single state. Blame it on my running mate. That's me!
It's great animation.
Oh, his little dance.
So, strut like Daniel Moynihan. What is the reference there?
I mean, I had to look him up. He was a senator from New York.
Long time senator from New York State. Yeah.
Yeah, and he hosted a show in the 60s, too, apparently.
Interesting.
Like a political chat show. But so he was just, if you were in New York, you probably knew. It was like, I don't know, if we make a Dianne Feinstein reference on here, will people know who that is outside of California?
Yeah, he'd been there he was one of those guys who was there a long time.
When you become a senator, you probably will die in the role I'd say most senators, unless you murder somebody, you're probably in there for life.
And this is the joke, but I think the first time I noticed that this square dance is rearranged by a string quartet. It's a very upper class square dance, which is why I like the music. So in case you Ross Perot. Henry, you could take that. I can take Admiral Stockdale, and we can all chime in here because it's an interesting tale of rich people.
Yeah, so Ross Perot was just a very rich man who, get this, was an outsider and felt that he should be the president and run the country.
That'll
like
never work.
A business.
What?
And he had wanted to be the Republican nominee but actually couldn't get it. And so because it was H.W. Bush's, he was the incumbent. He was not going to get primaried, or he wasn't primaried. And so Ross Perot instead ran as an independent. And he for a while was like, are you running? I don't know. Am I on it? And then he started running, and then he ended his nomination, and then he came back in. It's like, no, I am doing it. But as a kid, it was amazing to see. I would never have voted for Ross Perot, but it was amazing to see a third party candidate on a presidential debate stage, for one thing. Like,
it made Dana Carvey
see that.
It made Dana Carvey work even harder on SNL. He had to do two impressions at once.
But no, get this. He was just a rich guy who had no political experience, really, and then got in and said, I'm an outsider and I'll run it like a business. And I like populist things. And people from both the right and left decided, that guy's got no experience, but I guess he'll piss off those Washington elites, so I'll vote for him.
He's sort of goblin-like, but
And so he got a good percentage of votes. As his song said, he did not win a single state.
Blame it on his running mate.
And he did have a very kooky running mate, which we'll get to. But Ross Perot, I mean, he got a lot of votes, and there's some
20-something percent of the popular vote. Yeah. He did very well.
There is some argument that he cost Bush the election or not. I mean, Clinton's third way popularism also got him a lot of interest. Meanwhile, people were kind of tired of old fuddy-duddy H.W. Bush.
So, Clinton was young and sexy. By young, I mean 47.
Yeah, he's 47,
still.
Played a saxophone, and what a cool guy.
So Admiral Stockdale, in order to cinch the presidency, he did the smart thing, Perot, and he got a war hero to be his vice presidential running mate, Admiral Stockdale. He's sort of a gruff, unhinged guy, and I think in order to make a caricature of him on SNL, they took these statements literally. So here are his statements at the 1992 vice presidential debate, and they're hilarious.
Who am I? Why am I here? I'm not a politician. Everybody knows that. So don't expect me to use the language of the Washington insider. 37 years in the Navy, and only one of them up there in Washington.
So clearly we should hire this guy to run Washington.
But not a politician.
That was how he introduced himself.
Yes.
Who am I? Why am I here?
And it's a fun icebreaker of a line.
But
when Phil Hartman said those lines, he meant it as this is a crazy old man who is
awesome. Am I?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, everyone made fun of that point. But the really funny point was that there was where they asked him a question and he had turned off his hearing aid. He was not even giving a shit.
I remember that. Ooh,
and then he's like,
Grimlock.
He's like, I didn't have my hearing aid. Ask me again. Okay.
Yes, I don't think that did him any favors.
But he does such a great little dance at the hoedown.
I love that him and Franklin are good buddies. It kind of reminds me of the Simpson joke of Gerald Ford becoming good friends with Homer.
They do the Russian Cossack dance together.
Was that their – were they really part of a kleptocracy? What is the thing the hashtag resistance is talking about, the letter K word about how the Russians took over America with this?
Compromat?
Compromat.
I see.
Thank you. Yes,
compromising material.
Uh-huh. The pee tape. I want to see that.
I want to see the pee tape, or at least hear about it.
I actually don't want to see it, but I want it to exist.
Me too. We get a bit more of Eleanor's past. It turns out she was Miss Daisy, and her driver was radicalized and left her on the train tracks to die.
Again, I say this over and over again. This is a show where they can show movie parodies on his at his job, but everyone lives in a movie parody too.
So I think it's worth noting. This is the only Morgan Freeman parody that I've ever seen that gets his appearance right, and the voice is nothing like Morgan Freeman.
The caricature is great, I think.
Yes,
of him.
So were you going to – I thought
this,
you were going to play.
This
was
before everyone knew his voice, and so it sounds nothing like Morgan Freeman.
Well, I think, too, this was, again, Michael Carrington, who is the black friend.
Actually, I noticed that not every black character gets a Michael Carrington. I'm pretty sure this is Nick Jameson.
I felt sure it was Michael Carrington.
We'll check the tapes.
All right.
I love, again, that they're bringing Malcolm X into it, and that, Hope the Kindly Driver, as, you know, is sick of her old white lady shit, abandons her on the train tracks and tells her when the revolution comes, she will not be spared. And then it goes at the end of that, it goes to an actual line from Driving Miss Daisy of he was my best friend.
The train rapidly comes toward the car.
She's 2 seconds from death.
She managed to escape somehow.
I love that. I do love that cutaway of just that he has killed her and then she thinks that's the best friend she's
ever
had.
You can't kill her. Yeah. She's indestructible.
She's an immortal hag who boils her face for fun.
Yes.
And then she pulls out the same gun she threatened to kill a horse with to scare everybody away.
That's right. Let's hear it.
I know you could write a book.
A book, eh? Okay, I'll write a book. Perhaps a guide to etiquette and manners. I'll start right now. Last one out gets a butt full of lead. You heard me, Teddy. Put your pants on and get out.
I didn't come with pants, and I'm not leaving with pants.
That's even worse than Mr. Burns. She will shoot anyone in the ass, not just release hounds.
It's an increase from the release hounds joke. A Teddy Kennedy is a lech joke is always funny.
And a drunk.
Yeah. I believe there was a specific reference that was a rumor.
Really?
Right? Yeah, he would just he walked around a party once with just no pants on, just whatever.
I believe it.
So I guess this is like a big senator's party because, Kennedy was a senator from Massachusetts for a million years.
So many politicians were at this party,
I would also think Eleanor, it would have like a bipartisan party. It would just be about inviting famous senators and hoi polloi.
Hang out and be rich together.
But no representatives. They're the chicken shits.
No.
That's right.
None of those pigs.
So Eleanor's first book idea, Why the Poor Should Be Blasted Out into Space, is not a hit, but she does come up with another
it's
book
genocide.
Idea.
Genocide.
It really is.
Like, she's thinking of genocide.
Yes.
And that her – and I like that that's
but we
why –
we have the technology.
and that's why the butler is wiping his butt on her dish because it was so disgusting.
And Franklin just does it for fun.
Yeah, that he's always twisting again on those.
Like we did Last Supper. So Jay, being a fat little pig, gives Eleanor a book idea.
Honey, yeah, sugar, sugar, where is my candy bar? I think it was a Charleston Chew. There it is, I'm gonna eat tonight.
Jay, you've just given me a wonderful idea for a children's book.
It's weird they didn't actually do a parody of Candy Girl. It felt like they were trying to avoid paying money. It's like, we can't afford that. Like, The Simpsons could, though.
What's the song? Sugar?
Sugar.
Well, it's kind of a mix of, sugar. Dun, 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 dun. Oh,
by
honey,
the Archies.
Honey.
That's
the
right.
The Archies, a cartoon band.
Yep.
And which Homer, in season 5, the concurrent season of The Simpsons, that would be the song he listened to while on a boat with the junior campers, if you recall. And Charleston Chew is a crappy bar.
Charleston Chew.
Yahoo.
For tearing your teeth out.
Yes. It's one of the many anti-tooth candies out there, along with your Mary Janes and your Bitto Honeys.
Yeah, that are just, they predate good candies and they never really changed the thing. The only reasons I ever had Charleston Chews as a kid was when they had a get a free Marvel comic book in the mail if you buy enough Charleston Chews.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I did that, I was like, I ate all this poison candy I'm going to eat. It's got to be bad candy for a chubby kid to barely want it.
Yuck.
And it's also weird when he says, like, oh, is it going to be about the little engine who really, really could? Just the way he moans when he's talking about it to his mom, like, Yuck. Jay. Talking to your mother,
hey,
Jay.
Hey, Mom, you want to write a book about how good I am at sex?
He's often inappropriately sexual around his family members, even Margo.
Yeah, it's true. Well, he also brings escorts home to dinner.
That's true. So...
The Critic will be right back, you TV-addicted couch monkeys.
Are you hungry for a comedy sandwich? Try this. Home Improvement at a special time, 8, 7 Central. Then, from the producers of Home Improvement, Mom and the kids are moving in with Grandpa. And does he have his hands full? Edward Asner premieres in Thunder Alley. Then, it's men versus the women in a race to build the perfect house with help from John Elway and Evander Holyfield.
Give me the donut.
I don't think so, too.
It's all new. A Home Improvement sandwich with Thunder Alley in the middle. Don't hold the laughs, Wednesday.
We do see a chapter of The Fat Little Pig, the book Eleanor writes and presumably illustrates. She's got many talents. But I do want to say this book is cast in the design of Mary Blair, who was a former Disney artist, and she went on to illustrate a lot of the Little Golden Books. Wow. And every illustrator and animator rips her off completely, like in everything they do. She is so influential in animation and illustration, but I won't complain about that anymore. Let's hear a chapter of The Fat Little Pig.
Mother, I'm dropping out of law school to become a film critic.
Oh, that's terrible. Just rip out my liver and whip it into a scrumptious pâté.
Don't mind if I do. This whole story's about me, isn't it?
No, no, 1,000 times no. Well, yes, but so what?
Were you a Simpson joke, everybody?
Yes, that was from
Are you abandoning
four's?
Your god? No. Well, yes.
That was a Monty Python joke before then.
Wow, how deep does this go?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think Simpsons were the first people to ever think of denying something for a long time and then going, well,
yes. I will recommend everybody look up Mary Blair on Google Image Search. You'll find all kinds of amazing illustrations and pictures. She was fantastic in her day. And like I said, she was hugely influential. She's great.
My biggest problem with the Fat Little Pig jokes is that it is clearly a Golden Book style parody, which would make it 20 pages long, but they mention so many plot points that happen in it. I'm like, this is too many things to happen in a Golden Book. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we do learn more about Jay, though. Apparently, he was in law school and dropped out to be a film critic, but they're building more of his backstory.
It's true. I do like that. They probably send him to a fancy... I wonder if they're kind of imparting the shame that the writers feel, too, that their parents, their fancy parents, sent them to Harvard, and then they became comedy
writers.
And
you wrote jokes.
Came some fucking joke, man. Hey, I pay. You know how much money I paid?
I didn't capture a lot of these upcoming tiny jokes, but there's a nice – we see another business that's a division of Scumco. So we have Quality Pictures, Savvy Indian Chewing Tobacco, and Delightful Children's Books. They're all divisions of Scumco.
That's right.
And apparently they published Dr. Seduce's Horton Hears His Neighbors in Bed, which is a pop-up book.
So
they publish pornographic children's books, but they also want to publish Eleanor's, you know, legit child's book.
That was a great joke that you think that he's going to say, we published Dr. Seuss, and you're like, oh, yeah, they published Dr. Seuss. They're like, Seduce. Like, it is a clever joke. And same with at least Tiny pops back up again. I will say I think they got a good idea of a pet owner, which is having to just, if you love your pet and know you're not going to get rid of it, then you will just see like, well, I guess that thing I love was destroyed by my pet. I love this pet more, I guess. I guess I don't have that anymore.
You just have to accept there's a very good chance that, everything you own, it might be destroyed.
What has your little Steve destroyed yet? Anything valuable?
Steve has been, especially for a rescue dog, very non-destructive.
That's good to hear.
For a house full of toys and stuffed animals and stuff that's not the dog's.
Lots of chewables.
So many things he could chew. He like leaves our shoes alone. He's great.
Wow, that's
the worst thing
to hear.
He does is occasionally poop on the floor.
Well, who doesn't? I mean, we all have our failings.
We've all been there.
Yes. And Jay tries to enlist Tiny in obedience school, but Tiny is a mutt without papers. And to prove that Tiny is a pedigree, he pulls the tag off his pants, and it turns out Tiny is a husky, extra large. It's a cute joke.
That's funny.
We get probably the best boxer shorts joke, for the boys' boxer shorts.
I think that's my favorite.
Yeah, when Jay's pants fall down.
Well, Backdraft is pretty good, too.
Yeah. So what the hell kind of racist obedience school only accepts purebreds? Like
you figure all money is good. They just want to –
Exactly. Money's green. It spends the same.
I mean, there may be like the Emily Winthrop who ran the one in The Simpsons. Bart's dog gets an F. It's like, also very
funny. Unless you're an Academy for Show Dogs, like you have no business turning away a mutt.
Yeah.
I feel like she's one of Eleanor's bridge buddies, too, who runs that place.
Yeah, she's that sort of snobby. I do love I look for opportunities to say this sort of thing now. After Jay rips the tag out of his pants fall down, he's wearing four of the boys' boxer shorts, his response is like, come, Tiny, let's not let her embarrass herself anymore. Like, that's a great attitude to have. Work on that in your life.
And just his proud shuffle walk just away. Like, he won't even pull back up his pants.
Walk away with dignity. She's embarrassing herself, Tiny.
Why does the tag make his pants fall down, though?
That's weird.
Maybe he rips the back out of it and the elastic is, is gone.
I think it was a load-bearing tag. We can safely assume. So all of this Fat Little Pig merchandise is taking over the world, and people are confusing Jay.
It gets made really fast.
Yes, people are confusing Jay on the streets with the Fat Little Pig, which it was kind of cruel of Eleanor to design the Fat Little Pig after Jay Sherman, like down to like all the curves and lines in his face.
And the sweater vest.
Yes, the sweater vest is important, too.
It looks honestly, he could sue them. He's like, hey, this is my life rights. You're not allowed that. He could have made good money suing that pop-up book company.
But he is a public figure, so parody.
That's true.
His mom is parodying him. That's horrible. Yeah, and we get a repeat of the hunch joke too, where it's like, "I loved you in blank. I'm not blank. I know." One of those jokes.
But it's funnier with the kids yelling, "Fat little pig, fat little pig." It's funnier to have the kids say it too, to be that cruel.
Yes.
And speaking of school kids, I think it was bullshit that Marty gets assigned as a book report, like a 20-page book for. It's like he's in a junior. He's like almost middle school age, and in a very expensive middle school at the UN, they're assigning that book.
He should at least be reading Hatchet. Come on.
Yeah. Or The Giver, perhaps.
Yeah, where's Johnny Tremaine?
Johnny Deformed.
Red Badge of Courage. Mm-hmm. All the middle school book assignments.
So writing this book has given Eleanor's life purpose, and Franklin is so happy he decides to talk to Wilson again.
Oh, Franklin, people loved my book. My life has purpose again.
Oh, Wilson, my wife is happy again. My wife, Eleanor. 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 My wife, Eleanor.
Are you prone to having blackouts?
My book.
It fills time.
It certainly does.
But the key to that joke is Franklin, just his acting. He will not say the line differently. He won't notice he's even having to repeat it a bunch of times. He will say it with the same energy and interest as before.
Yes.
My wife, Eleanor. My wife, Eleanor.
He's got memento disease, but it's about 5 seconds long.
Yes.
That's all I can retain. So Jay is having Spielberg-based nightmares about Tiny's growth.
Even in nightmares, he cannot escape living in movie parodies. Yeah. Everything is
and
a movie parody.
And criticizing them.
Yes. Yeah, and criticizing
them. I want to be in a better Spielberg movie.
I mean, I think Jaws is better than Jurassic Park, but Jurassic Park isn't bad.
Not bad.
Nope, it's not. And we get a repeat of another joke in this episode. So we had a Family Affair, the movie, and now we have Barney the Dinosaur, the motion picture, which how can Barney and Humphrey the Hippo exist in the same universe? I ask you.
Maybe Humphrey the Hippo is just like the local variant. Or maybe it's like Inspector Spacetime where Humphrey's actually been around for longer and Barney is the ripoff.
Oh, or like in The Simpsons where Don King and Lucius Sweet can coexist.
Yes. He looks just like him too. Or Menthol Moose. Yeah. And Smoking Joe Camel.
Well, let's hear it now that I talked about it.
Hello, and welcome to Coming Attractions. Tonight, we'll be reviewing Barney the Dinosaur, the motion picture. Just look who got $10 million to play Barney.
This is so humiliating. You don't have to lose 100 pounds to play a dinosaur. Can't even see through the eye holes on this thing.
Hey, Barney's being funny.
No, I'm not. I don't do comedy. Not since The Freshman, that piece of crap. I don't know what I was thinking making that picture, let me tell you.
So is this when Madonna comes on? I don't think I have that part of the clip.
No, that's the next. That's actually in season two.
Okay.
Humphrey the Hippo.
God, these are all running together in my head.
They use the exact same background.
It's true, yeah.
I love it. It's always the setup of just look who got paid some extraordinary amount of money and to go into Brando. Also, The Freshman's not bad.
No, really, I like
The Freshman.
I heard a funny story about from the director. I think it was the director talked about how like he – he just wanted Brando to do a good job, and Brando was just phoning it in and not trying. And they said, okay, if I give you candy, will you do the scene right? And he did the scene perfectly. He's like, okay, where's my candy? Give it. Like, and it was just improving. He could do it great every time if he wanted. He just didn't care.
Yeah, and no. Whatever Frank Oz movie he was in, he wouldn't listen to Frank Oz because he called him like Miss Piggy or whatever. It's yep. Like – He didn't respect the puppeteer / director. Sorry, Diana.
Was that the score?
Yeah.
I think
yes.
So, yeah.
No, the Freshman's cute because he's basically just doing like a Corleone parody, pretty much.
But he's not a mobster
but
after all.
He's not really a mobster. And Matthew Broderick plays a guy going to film school, and boy, do I relate. And, yeah, scenes of really pretentious professors assigning the book they wrote to everybody.
Yeah.
So
that's how
you
they sell
all
them.
Have to go buy it.
That happens in non-film school, too, unfortunately.
Oh. That also, that book film taught me, don't listen to some helpful person who wants to help you with your bags when you just arrived in a big city.
Mm. Yep.
They're out to take your bags.
Swindlers. We see a RoboClapper next, which I didn't capture.
That one sucks.
It's pretty cheap.
That has to be the shittiest one they ever
did. That's the last time you can make a clapper joke in recorded history is 1994.
Clapper joke.
It's also badly timed because it's like you're under a rest. Don't do that again.
Yeah, it's too long. The joke takes too long. The pacing is bad.
Yeah, so like he stops talking mid-word so the guy can do the claps.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, please don't do that.
Yeah, it really sucked. By the way, there was a Barney movie in 1998 that had no stunt casting.
No one cared about Barney by then.
It was way too long. Took him way too long to make a Barney movie, definitely.
And so to capitalize on the Fat Little Pig sensation taking over the world, Duke releases pigs onto Jay's set and explains what the different pigs are.
Well, that there's an eating pig, that there's a snuggling pig, and that there's a pig you bring home to mama.
What are they doing on the set?
We're trying to capitalize on that fat little pig craze. I appreciate you rolling around in your own filth before coming in this morning.
Shut up.
Not the best reply. Not the funniest reply of just shut up. But
no witty rejoinder there.
Yeah. I want to know how you tell a snuggling pig from a pig you take home to mama.
It's in the eyes. The eyes say so much about that.
And what they're wearing.
So I guess the joke is that he has sex with pigs or that the country bumpkins have sex with pigs.
Or just makes out with them.
I like that.
Snuggling.
I do like the drawing of the pig ass on Jay in that eye dance. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's great. I forgot about that. It's one of the many we'll be right back things.
Yeah, it's still my favorite is Will Be Right Bark.
That's great.
He says it, Will Be Right Bark?
And this has taken over the world to the point where Franklin confuses a fat little pig doll for his own son.
Good news, son. I found the perfect mate for you. Her name is Barbie, and she's from Malibu. Now, she has a boyfriend named Ken, but he's not much of a man. I checked.
Mom, your book is ruining my life.
Now, Jay, you're only saying that because you resent my success. You think old women should just curl up and rot away. Oh, it's times like this that I wish I had tear ducts.
My favorite thing is how Franklin says Malibu.
Malibu.
I checked.
I just love her attempts to cry like,
This is what this is a sound I guess I've heard before. I think this is what,
Here's how the poor cry. Scumco even has a giant pig balloon.
Yes.
That's how big it's gotten in.
That one, Hopi.
Like 6 months. Like within 6 months at most, and based on Tiny's growth, which, like, again, we haven't seen Tiny in forever. It fails as a B plot because it's just so intermittent. You kind of forget about it. At least they make it connect at the end.
Yeah, I mean, there's a not great scene or joke where Jay takes Tiny to Vlad, who wants to butcher him.
Not the biggest fan of the joke that a foreigner would want to eat a dog. That's usually pointed at Asian foreigners, which Vlada isn't,
I will take hagfish soup. I will not take Tiny vittles.
Yeah. Although it does end with the classic joke of, I'm not going to let you cook my dog. Like, are you suggesting I serve him raw?
That is a Marx Brothers joke. Yeah, like Groucho would have really said that same joke.
But I do like, just going back to the nightmares, you know, his nightmares about Tiny attacking, like, in Jurassic Park or, like, Jaws. It's like, That is something I have experienced, where like an animal is somewhere near me while I'm sleeping, and it like becomes part of the thing. Like I used to house it sometimes for Michael's uncle, who had like the meanest cat in the world.
Oh.
And he warned me, it's like if you start dreaming about being near the ocean, the cat's probably in your face.
Oh.
And it totally happened because his little fish food breath would get in my face. Oh, wow. And he'd start, it just, all of a sudden I'm like, just thinking about fish and like, I'm down at the docks. And then all of a sudden I hear, and someone starts stepping on my face.
If like, you have a dream about being smothered by a cat, you're probably being smothered by
a
cat.
You're being smothered by a cat.
I had that dream of being peed on by a cat, of just like, oh, that's, I feel so warm and nice. Oh, he peed in my bed.
We end up seeing more of the Duke Phillips Empire. Apparently, he has Phillips Land, the happy place in Jersey, featuring the fat little pig ride, the Ham Hawker. And here
and a joke about Love Canal.
That's
which,
right.
Like,
yeah.
No, I had to look that up. It was a New Jersey toxic waste thing. If you heard jokes about toxic waste, like say Toxie the Toxic Avenger,
you're right? Yeah,
that was inspired by the toxic waste tragedy and disaster of Love Canal.
I love watching the people go in and come out as mutants. It's really nice. The Tunnel of Love Canal. So here is Duke addressing the crowd.
Welcome to Phillips Land. Home of that log ride that makes you look like you wet your pants. And now the creator of the fat little pig, Miss Eleanor Sherman.
I just want you to know that all the proceeds from this ride go to the Eleanor Sherman Foundation for blasting the poor into space.
She hasn't forgotten about her one true love, blasting the poor into space.
And it's still her plan.
We have the technology.
Is she just going to be catapulting them into the empty black void, or is this like a new life awaits you on the off-world colony sort of situation?
I think it's more of a ship into the empty black void, and they'll just eat each other alive.
It's like, again, if you want to kill the poor, like, just kill them. You don't, like, that's a lot of extra money to throw them into space.
Well, that way you don't have to look at them.
I guess so. Their corpses are not your problem. No mass graves needed there. But this takes place over years because it takes forever to build a ride at an amusement park, or Duke makes them so shoddily he can be done with them in like 3 months.
Yeah, I think they're renaming or reskinning like an old ride.
Yeah, that's true. That happens all the time.
It's like the Batman ride is now the Peanuts ride for some reason.
Because they lost their deal with Batman.
And we get a touch of Duke's love for lowbrow humor when he laughs at the idea of someone looking like they wet their pants.
Yes, yeah.
Talking butt.
just Charles Napier's sounds of amusement are always funny to me. And also, I was not surprised that in an episode about pigs that we would get a deliverance rape joke.
Make him squeal. Yes.
Squeal.
So the real threat of the fat little pig is not Jay's like ego. It's that people will see him and try to kill him for being the fat little pig.
Like murder. A mob will tear him to pieces as they would the elephant man.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I'm not a pig. I am a human being. And I have feelings, too. And if you think about it, I bet there's a scared, fat little pig inside each of you.
Get him for showing us the truth about ourselves! Yeah. He's getting away!
Somebody stop him!
Make him squeal!
Dear God, what have I done?
That is the second make him squeal that Charles Napier does.
And they reuse that same loop of animation.
Yeah, it's the same animation. Did get 5 more seconds in the show. Yeah, but I don't know. You want to call that that line of the show the
make
them,
him squeal?
Them being mad about empathy.
Yes, like, let's do it.
Made us see the error of our ways.
Nothing makes people angrier than that.
Again, I hate squeal like a pig jokes. Like, it's they're horrible jokes, but damn if Charles Napier isn't good at saying it. I have to give him that. Make him squeal.
I mean, just like how movies give you an excuse to make inappropriate jokes, we have the transphobic jokes with The Crying Game. This allows you to make a male rape joke.
Yep.
Disguise that in a little nice pack. A nice little package.
Yes, and same with jokes about autism thanks to Rain Man. Yep. You get all of your ableist and hateful jokes.
It's a rich tapestry.
It's so beautiful, yes.
And Eleanor kills the fat little pig with the final book, The Fat Little Pig Gets Smoked, and Jay is overjoyed.
Which?
Good night, Porky. You made me look so dorky. They kill you in New Yorkie. I hope you rot in hell. How did he die anyway?
He had a heart attack while singing and doing a stupid dance.
Ooh.
So Sorry, Michael, go ahead.
No, I love that even though everyone's angry about this book, they're still lining up angrily to get it, to buy it and get it signed.
That's true. It's like, I need to see this thing die.
I think it lets you have first person contact with her to all tell her, fuck you. This was before you had comment sections
that's
that let
true.
You do
that's
that.
True.
So she can do in person. I mean, this is what happens, you know, even back to Sherlock Holmes being killed off and everybody hating it. It's what happens when famous writers kill off a character because they control – that was the entire point of the movie Misery, which – and book, which was so great and the basis of the third episode of this season – second.
Miserable.
Episode. Yeah, Miserable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that song, though, Goodnight Ladies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Which I did not realize is – officially goes back to 1867 and
Whoa.
Is based on a song from 20 years earlier.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah.
Interesting. I forgot that was a real song. That came up a lot
Public
in the show Stella.
Too. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
They kept singing it to their neighbors. And just like in Uneasy Rider, the writers call attention to how bad the plotting is with this solution to Eleanor's problem.
Hey, why don't you take Tiny? He'd be happier out in the country and he can fill your lonely days with love.
Thank you for the dog, and thank you for the glib self-serving solution to my fragile emotional state.
You're welcome.
Another case of Jay saying you're welcome when it's not needed.
Yeah.
When he doesn't get it.
And that is them making fun of all sitcom writing that fixes a problem that can't be fixed in an episode.
And we never see Tiny again. I assume Vlada did butcher him.
Or she just killed him or something.
We also don't see that rhino that Franklin gets to ride at the end.
Oh, you're
That's
right.
True.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sort of rides by like, whatever.
There also did not need to be a cutaway to a fish playing badminton. It's like, I get the joke. We don't need to see a fish playing
That's right. She did teach a fish to play badminton.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I, as the finale to their time on ABC, the last joke is a great fuck you to their channel. Just like, and to everyone who's just tuning in to watch Home Improvement, good night. And, and then they play the Looney Tunes That's All Folks music because it was That's All Folks for them on ABC.
That is true. I do think it's a fuck you to the viewers too. Just like this insanity is happening and it's leading into the nice, cozy, warm, Home Improvement style of comedy. You have no idea what's happening, but please enjoy this last few seconds.
They were speaking directly to the viewer who was like, oh, it's 9:30, time to turn in, or 8:30, time to watch Home Improvement. Oh, what the hell's this? So it was just him talking to the what the hell's this people.
I did like this episode. Weirdly enough, I did not see this one in his first run. Only in the like early 2000s did it come on Comedy Central did I see it for the first time. So this still feels like a newer episode. I do feel like Dial M for Mother is the superior Eleanor J story. This one's okay. I wish they would just cut out the dog thing and make more of the Margot College thing a story. I don't know. The dog stuff is really weak to me. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah, I'm not too into the dog stuff either. And again, we talk about season one repeats all these plot lines. They already did in Eleanor's sad episode and has to find something new. They repeat themselves a bit. It's not surprising that they add two more characters in the next season because I think they realize they didn't have enough characters to really cycle through original ideas for stuff.
And Jeremy had run out of things to say that were Australian.
Yeah, they really don't care much for Jeremy.
I feel like this one was a big improvement over Uneasy Rider, but at the same time,
me too.
Like, I remember saying when watching it, it's like, this is like the disjointed death dream of the show's first season. Like, it's dying and its subconscious is breaking down and it's just ping-ponging between all these jokes, like some of which land, some of which are way off. And none of it in retrospect really makes any sense.
Yeah, I actually had to just remind myself now, like, oh yeah, this episode starts with a Aladdin parody. That was a million years ago.
And Pinocchio.
Was sandwiched into a Pinocchio parody.
Yes. Yeah. We really needed a what was the point epilogue for this. Sorry, Diana, go ahead, please.
No, I was going to say, I feel like the B story was so underserved, Tiny, that it's like that should be just an A story in another episode. And either you don't have a B story or you have something just a little more random that doesn't seem like a change to the characters that they have to deal with. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just,
a real whimper of a last episode on ABC.
They don't fit together as well, but I love all the Fat Little Pig stuff.
The Fat Little Pig stuff's funny. There's a lot of – this is definitely better than Uneasy Rider, which I'd say might be the worst episode of season one, which is not – actually, no. Marty's First Aid is still the worst episode of season one. I will say that.
I think Uneasy Rider is
Uneasy Rider still has – It has funnier cutaway gags in it and funny one-off gags. This Cuba stuff is like, I get it, Cuba. Got it. I prefer this one. That is my official worst of this – of season one. This is a good episode. I do like the fuck you to Home Improvement throughout it, too.
We'll get a bigger fuck you to ABC in the next episode.
Oh, boy, will we.
Thank you so much for listening, folks, and giving us money to access these episodes. I have been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast, which you probably have heard, is Retronauts every Monday at Retronauts.com. Or look for Retronauts in your podcast device. It's a classic gaming podcast. If you like video games or have played them once in your life, you will find something to like in Retronauts. Please listen. Everybody else, jump in.
I'm HENERYG on Twitter, and if you want to find out when new episodes of this go live, you should follow me there while I'll announce it. And I just want to thank all you folks for listening to this on Patreon and for your support. And if you wanted to tell your friends about how cool this is and how they should sign up for Patreon just to hear these great podcasts, why don't you do that? Come on. Now let's throw it to our other guests, other hosts.
And if you want to hear me talk about more references and old stuff and movies and whatever, I also do the weekly podcast 30-2010, where we look back that particular week 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago at the movies and TV and pop culture stuff. And I'm also on Twitter now at LeCineNerd.
And Michael.
As always, you can follow me on Twitter at WikiParas. Again, AZ not easy. Easy is an ebook spot of me that somebody made for some reason. I don't have anything to do with it. And you can hear my voice every week as host of Vidigame Apocalypse, the weekly podcast about video games at VidigameApocalypse.com.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the season 2 premiere, Sherman, Woman, and Child. We'll see you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.